At 7:30 on this West Virginia morning, I'm Beneduccio. A special celebration is set this evening to honor African-American World War I veterans.
This is hopefully a site where we can, you know, get young people, you know, enthusiastic and inspired about these two young women whose voices, you know, were kind of left in the past, and we're trying to bring that to life.
The story on this West Virginia morning. As we near the end of this legislative session, senators are splitting their floor sessions meeting twice a day to advance more bills. In their morning session yesterday, the chamber voted on and passed 8 bills, including one hoping to ease prison overcrowding by giving inmates more access to classes necessary to make parole. Ashton Mara reports.
Senators took up Senate Bill 457, requiring the State Division of Corrections to offer the rehabilitative courses to inmates in their custody who are being held at regional jails. The bill comes from Senator Don Cookman, a former circuit court judge. Cookman says by providing DOC inmates with courses that make them parole ready, the state can reduce prison overcrowding. The estimated $750,000 investment in additional courses could save the state up to $8 million, according to the Regional Jail Authority. Senators agreed and passed the bill unanimously. But it was a second bill Cookman has introduced that he stood to address. Senate Bill 567 was introduced last week and calls for the Division of Corrections to become its own state department with a cabinet-level secretary. That new department would incorporate the Regional Jail Authority, Division of Justice and Community Service, and the Board of Probation and Parole.
I stand here probably the biggest supporter, or one of the biggest supporters in this room, of making certain that the per diem for our regional jails that are paid for by our county commissions throughout the state are kept low. And I agree with most everybody in this room. I think that that is very important. When we go around our districts and we talk to our county commissioners and ask them what their number one problem is, they almost unanimously say the regional jail bills. And so I am very cognizant of that fact. But Senate Bill 567 will not do that. It is not going to increase the per diem. I think it's just a scare tactic to get some people to be opposed to the bill. So basically I'm asking that as this bill goes through the legislative process, that everybody keep an open mind and listen to the pros and cons of Senate Bill 567.
The senator added West Virginia would join 36 other states who have a cabinet-level corrections secretary. Senators also took up Senate Bill 376, requiring construction workers employed on publicly contracted sites to complete a 10-hour Office of Health and Safety Administration training course. Judiciary Chair Senator Corey Palumbo explained the course is offered by Brick Street Insurance for free in some cities, but is also available through multiple organizations online for a fee ranging from $10 to $30. He added the class is only required to be completed once, not each time a construction worker begins on a new site or on an annual basis. The bill passed on a 33-1 vote. Senator Bob Plymouth stood at the end of the session to bring attention to an issue often talked about in the legislature, but one he says lawmakers have failed in recent years to take action on. Plymouth says as he drives back and forth from Wayne County, he's noticed the condition of state roads is worse than ever. Because of a lack of funds, the state is on an average 33-year paving cycle that the Division of Highways would like to see at 12.5.
To me, I don't know how much it's going to cost. I would say it's going to be between $20 and $25 million to be able to do the right and appropriate paving cycle. But we have got to find something, even if it is in the rainy day fund, because this is a rainy day for our roads. And if our roads are not kept and maintained, we are going to run into problems as we move forward. So I would urge, Mr. President, that we try to do everything we can to before we leave here, to have some kind of a service to be able to do paving cycle for this spring. Thank you.
The Governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways, a group appointed by Tomlin to find new revenue sources for infrastructure development, has pushed off their final report until after the session, meaning any recommendations from the executive on roads are still on hold. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Before the House floor session yesterday, several minor committees met to look over proposed legislation. The Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee looked at two bills intended to protect two different resources. Aaron Payne reports.
The first bill the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee considered was Senate Bill 353. The bill would define timber theft in the state and give the Division of Forestry the authority to investigate and enforce penalties of theft in state forests. Under current code, the division must hand over investigations to other law enforcement agencies. Delegate Woody Ireland asked West Virginia Division of Forestry Director Randy Dye how many thefts have occurred in these 60,000 acres of state forest in the past 5 years. Dye said that the statistic could not be tracked due to current classifications. However, he did relay one particular theft on a state forest in Wayne County.
On Cabway Lingo, as an example, one state forest, we have five documented cases where approximately $100,000 worth of timber was stolen. And we, the Division of Forestry, did not have the authority to investigate that.
The bill was passed and referred to the Judiciary Committee. The committee also discussed House Bill 4523 that would allow the Agriculture Commissioner to make rules regulating lawn fertilizer containing phosphate and establish the penalties for violations. The hope is that those rules would align with other states such as Maryland in order to prevent runoff pollution into water sources. Some delegates were concerned that without phosphate, lawn care would become difficult. However, Vice Chair Mike Manypenny explained that without phosphate, lawns could still receive the nutrients they need.
Your lawn's going to stay green because of the nitrogen, and there is going to be residual phosphate in the soils. It just isn't going to need to be applied to where it, usually this is a liquid fertilizer that they use for lawn care maintenance, and it's very susceptible to runoff since it's already a soluble fertilizer.
Delegate Manypenny also explained that phosphate is used to seed and flower rather than keep lawns green. The bill was approved and sent to the Judiciary Committee. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection officials say repairs are still moving forward at the site of last week's gas well explosion at a Chevron site in Greene County, Pennsylvania. Workers are keeping to a contingency plan, and officials are hoping the well can be completely controlled by the end of the week. Scott Perry, spokesman for the Pennsylvania DEP, says with work that must be done to control the site, it will take the rest of the week to finish this part of the job at the earliest.
We're anticipating Friday that the well will be fully under control, but obviously there's a number of contingencies that could occur, everything from weather that makes travel on the roads too difficult to unanticipated problems.
A fire last week caused significant damage to a well site just north of the Pennsylvania-West Virginia border. A lot of equipment, including a crane from West Virginia, was destroyed. Perry says the crew that was on site at the time of the incident was putting in a special tube in the well's casing.
The well in question had been hydraulically fractured, but Chevron actually does not flow back wells in a manner where they flare the gas as part of the completion process. Instead, they wait until a pipeline is available, and they put the well immediately into production and separate the water that was injected into the well. They separate it during the production phase of the well. They put in a smaller diameter production tube within the production casing itself. They use that production tubing to facilitate removal of the water that's within the formation from the hydraulic fracturing process. And they were in the process of commencing that operation, putting in a smaller diameter production tube within the production casing of the well. It's our understanding that work had not actually commenced, but at the time that the explosion occurred.
Water was taken from nearby Dunkard Creek as a precautionary measure in case another fire broke out. Perry says if the water isn't used at the site, it will be used for hydraulic fracturing. Perry says the investigation into what caused the incident is ongoing.
That is the question that Chevron others are attempting to ascertain. The very best information we have at this time is that there was an uncontrolled release of gas, and that was ignited from a source that is yet to be determined. So there are two questions that need to be answered. And the most critical question is why did this well fail? The source of the ignition is important, but it is less critical than to understanding how the release of gas occurred in the first place.
Gas is still venting at the well site. According to Perry, no West Virginia resources are being used in the effort now. One worker was missing from the explosion. According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, remains were found at that site, and the worker is presumed dead. The nation's first and only building memorializing African-American veterans of World War I is located in Kimball in McDowell County. Tonight at the Kimball World War I Memorial, a celebration of Black History Month will take place that highlights the work of two previously unknown poets from the era. Cecilia Mason has more.
The two poets, sisters from Beckley, who at age 17 and 19 attended the West Virginia Colored Institute, which is now West Virginia State College, wrote the 83-page hardback book with a soldier on the front. It was published in 1919, and in the late 1970s, Jean Barnes Peters found it sitting on a bookshelf in her house in Charleston. The authors, Ada and Ethel Peters, were half-sisters to Jean's husband, Joseph Cromwell Peters.
And he said, I can't tell you anything about this book. Those young ladies would have been 20 years older than I am. I never met them. I never saw them. I don't know anything about them. He said, and my father and their mother were divorced.
Joseph Peters' father was killed before he was born, and his mother moved to Logan. The little book of poetry fascinated Jean Peters, and she would occasionally pick it up and read some of the poetry, which she describes as long, long narratives. The preface in the book reads, "The sole intention of the authors in writing these poems is to show the Negro's loyalty to the Stars and Stripes in the war with Germany, and to show the need of unity of all men in the fight for democracy."
But eventually I started to scrutinize what they were saying. And it was protest, and which seemed unusual to me for teenage girls in 1919 in rural West Virginia to be even knowledgeable about what was going on in World War I just before and just after, and how badly black soldiers were treated.
The fifth poem in the book is written by Ada Peters and is called The Slacker. It was this poem that caused Jean Peters to bring the little book to the attention of West Virginia University visual journalism and new media professor Joel Beeson and his students. Mrs. Peters was invited to attend an event back in 2011 at the Kimball Memorial for an exhibit the students created on World War I soldiers.
And there was a poster that said, "The colored man is no slacker." It was a World War I poster, a very idealized picture of this black soldier going off to war with kissing his sweetheart in front of a picket fence while the troops marched with the flag waving in the background. And she said, "Oh, there's a poem in this book I have called The Slacker."
The poem begins, "God forbid ere man was born to crush honor beneath his feet, that the light of day should dawn upon one who from duty flees while on freedom's bleeding altar his noble comrades have bled, but he stands idle, a slacker, disgraced before living and dead."
These young women who were 17 and 19 were commenting very intelligently on their times. And the things they were saying were protests. They were asking for civil rights. And this was back in 1919, before the internet, before television, before radio. They were very educated, very knowledgeable about what was going on in the world, and were making social commentary at that time.
So Beeson and his students took on a new project that includes an interactive website called War Poems, where you can page through the book, read the poetry, learn about its history, and the story of how Jean Peters found it on a bookshelf in her house. Beeson says one goal is reaching young people.
We're trying to use interactive media, new media, because that's, you know, that's the language and that's the medium that young people use. So, you know, this is hopefully a site where we can, you know, get young people, you know, enthusiastic and inspired about these two young women whose voices, you know, were kind of left in the past, and we're trying to bring that to life.
An event is planned this evening from 7 to 9 at the Kimball War Memorial that will include a demonstration of the website and presentations from Beeson, Peters, and some of the students who worked on the project. Beeson's class will also work with classes in Mountain View Middle and High Schools tomorrow, where students will learn about the War Poems site and the Kimball Memorial. They will also participate in a poetry contest in which they'll tweet poems from the website. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
And to finish the show today, we leave you with a very special moment that occurred in the legislature yesterday. A group of students from the West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind sang songs for members of both the House and Senate during their morning floor sessions. Here is the students' version of The Green Rolling Hills. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. You can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast while you're there. We welcome your feedback. Please send it to feedback@wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our director is Bob Powell. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. From Morgantown, I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.